Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important segment of society. To those of us who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that no amount of devotion or effort can fix them. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, and we're going to begin with the story of the three murdered teenagers in Israel, one of which was an American citizen, is toll-free. It is 877-300-7645. The settlers in Israel, and why anyone would refer to them as settlers or why anyone would refer to Judea and Samaria as occupied simply reveals the ignorance of the writer. But Israelis did, as we all know, discover the bodies of the three boys who were kidnapped last week. They appear to have been murdered within hours, if not a day, of their capture. Preliminary reports say that they were shot in cold blood at close range in the head. They were all very young men, all with lives ahead of them. And they were butchered by a religion that endorses kidnap and endorses murder. There's lots of bad behavior that takes place around the world, lots of bad behavior. In my country, which is the United States of America, every day, people are involved in heinous crimes, thievery, armed robbery, murder, the sales of poisonous chemicals. It happens routinely, but there is a difference. There is a huge difference, and this is the difference that Obama and his comments to Israel, and the Pope and his comments to Israel seem to have missed, and it is the central moral issue of what happened here. In the United States, when someone kidnaps another, it is never part of a religious agenda. It's never part of a political agenda. If someone kidnaps somebody, they're doing it for either money, to ransom the individual back, or they're doing it because there's some unique perversion of that individual. And so kidnaps occur in the United States. They aren't common. Kidnaps occur in Europe. They aren't common. But the common thread amongst all kidnaps in the United States is the individual doing it is a lone wolf. They either are sexually perverted, they're either thugs who want to kidnap for ransom, and this is their way of making money, or they're just have a beef with an individual and kidnap them for that reason. But it's always individual, and it's the perversion of a lone soul. Now, when it comes to the perversion of individuals, there's really nothing we can do as a society. We can have laws that says that those individuals will be hunted down, the perpetrators of such crimes, and that they will be tried, and if guilty, they will be convicted, and they will suffer the consequences, which would usually be fines and imprisonment. We can do those kinds of things, but that's really all we can and should do. But that's not what happened in Israel. This was a kidnap on behalf of a political and religious doctrine, Islam. And in this case, the three young boys that were kidnapped were non-combatants. They were just innocent civilians. The kidnappers, in all likelihood, did not know them. Moreover, the motivation of the kidnappers and the glee of those who supported them was 100% religious. You see, it is part of Islamic Sharia law to kidnap. And you might say, how in the world could you have a legal system that authorizes what every legal system in human history has decried against? And the answer is that Muhammad was amongst the most perverted men who ever lived. So in Islam, the kinds of things that the rest of the world for the last 5,000 to 6,000 years has recognized as grotesquely inappropriate and immoral, Islam celebrates, authorizes, encourages. And that is because Sharia law is based entirely on one thing. Now, I know that there are religious clerics who say it's based on the Quran. Well, that's nonsense. That's pure ignorance speaking. Sharia law is based entirely on Muhammad's life, on his words, on his actions. Muhammad's words and deeds are not chronicled in the Quran, unless you view the Quran correctly, which is nothing but situational scriptures where Muhammad made it all up to satiate his personal lust for sex, power, and money. But Muhammad makes the pretense that the Quran is from his wannabe god, Allah, and therefore pertains to Allah's personality and wishes, not Muhammad's. Therefore, the only place that you could find Muhammad's words and deeds is in the Hadith. Now, it's, of course, interesting that while Muslims don't want to admit it, it is irrefutably true that the Quran is Hadith. What do we mean by Hadith? Hadith is oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. The Quran is an oral report from Muhammad, passed on mouth to ear through the generations through Muhammad's companions, the first Muslims. In the Hadith, which are all consistent with the Quran, what we find is that Muhammad himself, during the first 10 years of the Islamic era begins immediately after the Satanic Verses, where Muhammad spoke on behalf of three of the goddesses that were part of the rock pile that is the Kaaba shrine that Muslims circumambulate during Ramadan. And Muhammad agreed to elevate the three lunar goddesses to divine status, making his monotheistic religion pagan, because the Meccans said, if you do so and honor our goddesses, that we will give you what you crave, which is sex, power, and money. Muhammad capitulated. But then when Abu Bakr, who gave Muhammad his six-year-old daughter when Muhammad was 50 to play with as a sex toy and was 100% responsible for financing Islam because he was a traitor, said, wait a minute, you've been giving us this whole spiel that you're talking directly to Allah and that Allah is the lone creator God of the universe. There are none beside him. And now you've got four gods and goddesses. And so Muhammad was forced to recant his statement, which is found in the Quran, that there were three goddesses that are intermediaries to Allah. He was forced to recant it. And when he did, his explanation was that Satan made him say it, that inspiration came from Satan. And then he went on to say that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan. Well, that part is probably true. Occasionally, Muhammad told the truth. All of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan. That's called the Satanic Verses. At the same time, Muhammad was so embarrassed that he imagined himself in the middle of the night riding a wild ass, a barak, a winged ass, yes, a winged ass, from Mecca to Jerusalem one night. Yeah, covering the territory in supersonic speed. Not getting a nosebleed in the process, and landing in Jerusalem and then going into the temple. Only one problem for Muhammad. He was dumber than the stones that he was elevating to God. There was no temple in Jerusalem in 610 CE. It had been destroyed by the Romans in 70 CE, and Jerusalem itself had been destroyed by the Romans in 135 CE. So after the midnight ride of the winged ass and the satanic verses, Muhammad was exiled, let's say, from Mecca. The Meccans laughed him out of town. And on his way out of town, he met with some folks from Yathrib, today's Medina, where he got them to believe that he was God's messenger, the Messiah to the Arabs, and that they should pick up their swords to wage war against all mankind on his behalf. That's how it all began. That was in 610 CE. Now, from that time on, Muhammad led 75 terrorist raids. So terrorism is germane to Islam. When you witness Mujahideen and jihadists as they are in Syria and Iraq, murdering, raping, plundering, kidnapping, or Hamas kidnapping and murdering in Israel, you need to know that Muhammad set that example. For the next 12 years of Muhammad's life, his every moment was spent plundering others, terrorizing others, kidnapping others, engaged in the slave trade. It was the dominant focus of his life for the first 12 years of the Islamic era. And so all of those behaviors, kidnap, murder, rape, the slave trade, and terrorism, are considered beneficial, worthy, divine, godly behaviors in Islamic Sharia law. So the Muslims who kidnapped these three young Jewish boys and then murdered them were following Muhammad's example. This is Islam. It's not a perversion of Islam. It's not an extremist interpretation of Islam. It is Islam as Muhammad lived it. And because these kidnaps and subsequent murders are an example of fundamentalist Islam, the Islam of Muhammad, the only Islam that exists in the world, it's awesomely different than when somebody in some other country for personal reasons is some kind of a weirdo, pervert, or morally bankrupt individual, and they kidnap somebody and murder them. In this case, it is the religion itself that inspired this heinous behavior, which is why Hamas has been celebrating it. We'll return to the kidnap, the murder, and to Israel, as well as Islam, after the break. Dateline is Jerusalem. Israeli searchers found three bodies believed to be those of the missing Israeli teenagers. They have obviously been confirmed at this point. Who were abducted, this article says. Kidnapped is the right term. They were literally kidnapped for the purpose of Islam, both politically and religiously. It's now more than 2 weeks ago. And this article says in the occupied West Bank. Let's be clear. Judea and Samaria are part of Israel. They have been part of Israel for the entire period of recorded history. There is no records. There are absolutely no records anywhere in the world historically that show Judea and Samaria, the Israel, being occupied by anyone other than Jews. Now, it does say that the chosen people came into Israel when there were some people in a variety of different towns. But that's the only place we even know of those other towns is Yahweh's Torah presentation. So, apart from Yahweh's Torah presentation, there is no one who has ever been associated with that territory throughout man's early history other than Yehudim, the Israelites. And in the one ancient source, the Hebrew Torah and prophets, and Psalms, the writings, we find Yahweh, who proves that he is God, beyond any doubt, demonstrates that he is God through prophecy. Through his account of creation, the flood, and Eden, through his consistent presentation of his plan, we find Yahweh choosing to give this tiny strip of land called Yisrael to his chosen people. The universe is his. This earth he created. If anyone's in a position to give a nation, he's in that position. And it's the only nation God gave to anyone. And so you have the creator God of the universe saying, I'm giving this land to my chosen people who are the descendants of Abraham, of Yitzhak and Jacob. And we have not only the detailed and accurate history of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to explain their time in this land, all the way from Abraham in 2000 BCE, 4,000 years ago, to their return into the land 400 years later. We have detailed accounts, not only in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the most accurate historical document of antiquity, but there's just literally countless affirmations of this that have been found through the archaeologist Spade. And it's only in 135 CE, in the second Yisrael Yehudim rebellion in the Roman province of Yehuda, that the Romans crucified most of the Israelites. Those they didn't crucify, they either raped or they hauled off into slavery. They made it illegal for Jews to even enter the city of Jerusalem, the few that they allowed to live. And so by Roman conquest, to put down a Jewish rebellion, because the Jews were the only courageous people on the earth at this time that would consistently, as a nation of Yehuda, rise up against Roman oppression. Yes, the Gauls, which was a people but not really a nation, and the Vandals did the same thing here and there, but they also fought at times with the Romans, and they were never really a nation. But Yisrael did it twice, almost beating the Romans both times. And so we have from Rome, from the archaeologist Spade, even from the conquests of Alexander the Great, from the ancient histories of Assyria and Babylon, we have absolute, unequivocal documentation that Yisrael, all of it, was occupied by Yehudim, by Yisraelites. And therefore, to infer that the West Bank is occupied and does not belong to Israel, you have to be either completely irrational or completely ignorant of human history. The bodies of the three young boys, two just 16 years old, one 19. If you haven't seen them, there's hundreds of online articles about this story. Just Google it. Take a look at their faces. Get to know the consequence of Islam up close and personal. Look into their eyes and recognize that the religion Muhammad inspired 1400 years ago is still murderous and still wiping out lives around the world. The boys were piled together and then had rocks thrown on top of them in an open field between Halul and Beit, which means the house of Ka'il. These are two towns outside of Hebron. Hebron is south of Jerusalem. They were kidnapped about 5 miles, maybe 10 miles at the most, but between 5 and 10 miles, due south of Jerusalem, and then they were driven another 10 miles further south, which is where their bodies were dumped. This article says they know it's the three, and they will know for sure after doing the autopsy. They'll actually be buried today. One of the officials said the autopsies have now been completed. The three appeared to have been shot to death very close to the time of the kidnap. Israeli television reports that the bodies had been discovered by volunteer guides from the Kfar Etzion Field School. They were all students. The television account said that the bodies had been partly covered and appeared to have been dumped hurriedly, probably soon after the kidnap. The three teenagers, Eyal Yefrach, 19 years old, Gilad Shaar, 16 years old, and Naftali Frankel, who was just 16 years old. Naftali Frankel was also an American citizen. They were last seen entering a car around 10 p.m. after classes on June 12th. They were picked up at a popular hitchhiking stop in the Gush Etzion settlement block, not far from the area where the bodies were found, actually about 10 miles or so. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Hamas was responsible, a claim the Palestinian militant group has denied, according to the report here by the BBC. The Palestinian militant group, actually, and it's amazing how jaundiced media reporting is towards all things Israel. Immediately upon this occurring, the Hamas glorified in it, saying that this was a magnificent deed done on behalf of Islam. And they went out of their way to praise the kidnappers, saying that they were doing Allah's work. And they took the World Cup trophy that has the three hands that are all reaching up and the, you know, the soccer ball. Well, they removed the soccer ball and they put the three boys' figures in the hands that were raised up, and then underneath it, victory. The Palestinian Authority, in its controlled newspaper, printed the cartoon, victory. So to say that the Palestinians, the Hamas, has denied kidnapping the boys is a grotesque fabrication. They celebrated it. They encouraged it. They praised it. Beyond that, it even goes further. When Abbas of the PLO said, you know, that was a tragedy. We will cooperate with the Israeli Defense Forces to try to find the kidnapped boys. It's inappropriate to be kidnapping young boys. What Hamas said was that the PLO doesn't speak for them, doesn't speak for Israel, doesn't speak for the mythical people known as the Palestinians, and did everything in their power to condemn the PLO for saying that kidnapping was wrong. So for Hamas to say, we had nothing to do with this, is just a pile of rubbish 10 feet tall. Every one of their press accounts, every one of their public statements, not only celebrates it, but condemns anyone who would speak against it. Moreover, the two suspects, both of which disappeared at the same time of the kidnapping, are both active members within Hamas. It's amazing, though, that the BBC, and this is the same thing with the Washington Post, it's the same thing with the New York Times, it is the same thing with Reuters, it was the same thing with every news source that I looked at this morning. Not a single one of them would add, after they said something, they claimed that the militant group, this is an Islamic terrorist organization, Hamas, denied, not one of them reported on the 2 weeks of constant Hamas celebration of the kidnapping. Not one. So how is anyone going to understand what really happens And who's responsible when they leave out the most important part of the story? They should be ashamed, but they're not, because it is politically correct to hate Israel. It's politically correct to run cover for the murderous Muslims that are masquerading as Palestinians. Now, the fact of the matter is that Hamas did this and celebrated it. And now the other aspect of this is really interesting. Every single story that I read this morning, even for Fox News, you know, fair and balanced, has the Israeli bombings from their jets of Gaza today positioned as Israel's response to the kidnapping. And they all know that's not true. But they're all trying to make it look like, okay, so Hamas kidnapped three Israelis. Look at how Israel is escalating this. They sent their fighters immediately over Hamas and started strafing it and sending missiles into Hamas territory. Those savages, those Israelis, they know that's a lie. The reason that Israel flew its warplanes over Gaza yesterday is because the morons, the savages, the animals known as Muslims in the Hamas movement, decided that in addition to kidnapping and murdering these three young boys, they would send 50 rockets into civilian areas of Israel yesterday. They launched 50 rockets. Remember that about 6 months ago, the big peace accord, the whole world intervened, telling Israel that they couldn't continue to destroy Hamas rocket launchers and Hamas rocket brigades, because those rocket brigades, the rocket launchers, were next to schools and apartments, because the Hamas doesn't care. In fact, they actually like it when their women and children are killed by Israelis. So they deliberately put their rocket launchers next to schools and hospitals and to apartments. And Israel was responding and taking out the rocket launchers because Hamas was firing rocket after rocket into Israel. And then there was this international peace accord where Hamas agreed that it would stop sending rockets into Israel. Now, they sent in 50 yesterday. So what did Israel do? It bombed every one of the sites where those rockets were launched. It had nothing to do with the kidnap and murder of these three young Israeli boys. There will be a consequence for that, but this is not it. And the reporting by every news agency this morning, with the headlines inferring that Israel's fighters were in reprisal for the kidnap and murders of its children, are absolutely untrue. It's Hamas being Hamas. The truth is, and this will sound harsh, but it's not. It's actually merciful. The world would be vastly better tomorrow if every member of Hamas were eliminated today. In fact, if every fundamentalist Muslim on the planet ceased to exist today, there would be no terrorism tomorrow. Rapes would decline about 99% around the world. Kidnaps would decline about 99% around the world. Armed conflicts would decline about 95% around the world if there were no fundamentalist Muslims infecting this planet. Benjamin Netanyahu said that the boys were kidnapped and murdered in cold blood by animals. And he promised that Hamas will pay. It is true. They were kidnapped and murdered in cold blood by animals. But folks, what he did not say needs to be said. The Muslims who kidnapped and murdered these boys were infected by Islam. It is Islam that made them animals. Islam turned them into savages. Remember when Giuliani was mayor of New York following 9/11, and his most famous line is that the terrorists have hijacked their religion, and that therefore the religion of Islam was not responsible for 9/11, that these Muslim terrorists who perpetrated 9/11 had corrupted their religion to justify the suicide bombings. And, of course, then you had every MM on the planet use the American media, which is filled with ignorant and irrational people, to tell you how peaceful Islam is and that jihad means personal struggle, not fighting, all of which they knew at the time were lies, the Muslims did. Well, the fact of the matter is that Islam corrupted the kidnappers and murderers. They didn't corrupt Islam. Islam lived as the Quran orders Muslims to live. Muslims have to emulate Muhammad's words and deeds. Muhammad was a kidnapper. Muhammad was a slave trader. Muhammad was a rapist. Muhammad was a mass murderer. Muhammad was a terrorist. The religion of Islam corrupted these men. Occasionally, Muslims tell the truth. It's not often, mind you. It's a really twisted and perverted religion. It's a religion based upon a pile of lies. So you wouldn't expect Muslims to tell the truth very often, but occasionally they do. Hamas spokesperson Sami Abu Zuhri told the news reporters that any action to punish Hamas for the kidnap and murder of the three young boys would, and I quote, open the gates of hell. Absolutely. You know, occasionally I agree with Muslims. You screw with a Muslim and it will open the gates of hell. Islam is the most overtly satanic religion ever conceived by humankind. Allah was modeled after Satan. Muhammad admitted it. You know, by the way, so did Paul, so don't be too gleeful if you're a Christian. Muhammad admitted to being demon-possessed. He admitted that his inspiration came from Satan. He depicts Allah, and every time Allah is located in the Quran, he is depicted in hell. 100% of the time that Allah is described in the Quran, he is in hell torturing somebody, either a peaceful Muslim or a Jew, or infidel of some sort. Always. Constantly. It's also interesting that Allah tortures Islamic suicide bombers. That anyone who perpetrates a suicide mission in Islam is hated by Allah. Pretty interesting in that regard. And that the only reason that they're hated is not because they gave up their life. It's certainly not because that Allah is opposed to Muslims strapping bombs to their bodies and killing non-Muslims. Oh, Allah is all for killing non-Muslims. He just constantly relishes death. No, the reason that Allah is opposed to suicide bombings is because He wants the Islamic jihadists to go on killing. And, you know, once you're a suicide bomber, you can only kill once. So there is one example in the Islamic hadith where Muhammad's most ruthless warrior, a man who was instrumental in the demise of the Qurayza Jewish settlement in Yathrib, this individual, Sattar, wanted have all of the Jewish men murdered in front of all of the Islamic community and in front of their wives, their sons and daughters and mothers and fathers. They wanted every man who survived the Islamic assault on the Qurayza, the largest settlement of Jews in Yathrib, murdered one at a time, with Muhammad preceding over the ceremony. And then after that, he wanted every Jewish woman raped, with Muhammad getting first pick as who he got to rape, and then all of the rest of the first Muslims getting pecking order, as to who they got to rape, and they would rape girls as young as 6 years old, and they'd rape women as old as 70 or 80. And then he decreed that all of the children, the youngest children, be sold into slavery. That's all chronicled in the Quran. So this is not just hadith, it's also in the Quran. And this individual was later engaged in a battle. And in the battle, battle is really a wrong term, was a terrorist raid. Muhammad never fought in an actual battle, never once. He was never once in a defensive position. He was always the aggressor. The two times where it's presented that, well, the Meccans came up to attack him, and you could pretend like it was defensive. The only reason that the Meccans were coming up to attack him is they were tired of Muhammad kidnapping their women and children, raping them. They were tired of Muhammad robbing their caravans. They were tired of Muhammad murdering Meccans. And so they only went up there to thwart his ability to terrorize them. And so in one of these terrorist raids, this fellow, Sadr, was gravely injured. And he came back from the raid into Yathrib, today's Medina, and he was dying an extraordinarily anguishing death with no hope whatsoever of surviving. And so from his battle wound, he took his own life. And Muslims asked Muhammad about it. We will talk about what they said in a moment, but what they said should cause every imam who sends a boy on a suicide mission to cringe. That's if they still have a viable conscience, which they don't.